And we're back. It is the Taylor Report, CIUT, 89.5 FM in Toronto. And our guest is Peter McFarlane, and his book is Family Ties, How a Ukrainian Nazi and a Living Witness Link Canada to Ukraine Today. And we're going to talk about a book that does provided the link, a new edition of Dobrid, a novel by Anne Charney. And Peter has written the foreword, and it's a very important book, and I think Peter's with us now. Are you there, Peter?
Yes, I am. Hi, how are you?
Very good. I'm glad to be talking to you. This is a wonderful autobiographical novel. And you learned of this book many years ago, and it had a lot to do with shaping your book, Family Ties. Tell us about how you found the book and what it did to your thinking.
Yeah, I guess I read the book for the first time about 20 years ago, and I was really impressed with it. In fact, I think it stayed with me like no other work of literature or contemporary literature. So for 20 years, it was always in the back of my mind. I knew Anne Charney, the author. I'd known her for a few years before that, so she was a well-known journalist and a novelist. She wrote, I think, a column for Maclean's magazine in the 1970s, and she did features for Saturday Night in the 1980s. So she was a well-known writer, and she became a friend of mine. And so the book, of course, is set in what is now Ukraine, was in Poland in during the Second World War, the Dobrid, and she was born in a town not far from Lviv, not far actually from where Chrystia Freeland's family was born. And that was yes. The link, because I hadn't intended to do anything with Dobrid. I was researching Chrystia Freeland's Shomiak family there, who were aligned, I guess, with the Nazis during the Second World War. He actually edited a newspaper in Krakow, a nationalist newspaper that was funded by the Nazis. And so I was doing research in just around Lviv. I met family members of the Chomiaks. And all during that time, of course, Dobrid, the book, was set in that area. And so it stayed with me. It kept coming back to me. And so I did, I went and I met with Anne after. And I said, asked her if I could use parts of Dobrid and tell the story of her family as it was told in Dobrid and in interviews I had subsequently with her in this book. So it would be two families. It would be her family from a little Jewish town north of where Chomiak's family was, and the Chomiak family. So the family ties to that part of the world and how they kind of influence today with our policy in over Ukraine and the nationalists, that sort of thing.
Yeah, it is such a, it provides for any reader, and by the way, it is such a beautifully written book. It's like a marker that you won't go away. This is true evidence. This is a true memory of Nazi presence in what was in Poland and now is called Western Ukraine. But it is. I was very struck by it. I think you were too. It's remarkable that it's a child's memory, right. And the child doesn't have a political filter. They say. The child sees what it sees and repeats or points out what is striking. And here she's got two wonderful adults, but she's seeing things, and her life is being managed wonderfully by people under extreme stress.
Exactly. And that's, as you mentioned, she's a remarkably good writer. I mean, that comes very clear from the first sentence of this book and carries right through. But also, it is an autobiographical of her story. She was born in 1940 in Dobrid, the town of Dobrid. It's an anagram for Roy in Ukraine, then Poland, of course. And her father was actually executed by the Nazis on July 7th when they arrived in Dobrid in, I guess, around the 30th of June. They gathered all the intellectuals together. They said to form a ghetto committee, and they marched them out and they executed them. Her mother did end up in the ghetto eventually, In, I guess, 1942, I think they formed the ghetto, and Anne was with her, and then eventually her mother managed to escape the ghetto, and they hid in a Polish barn with her aunt and her cousin. And so that was a little over 2 years. They were hidden in the barn. And so Anne, of course, had no memory of going into the barn, but all her early memories of life were living in the barn with her, you know, in the fear and hunger that she remembered during that period. Then they were liberated by a Red Army soldier, a Red Army group that the family got to know, the soldier who stayed with them for a while, mm-hmm. when they were returned to their place. And so the story then becomes something really interesting, because it's actually like a rebirth for Anne, because at the age of 4 or 5, mm-hmm. she'd been sent her 2 years rather, in the barn. And so she's carried down from the loft by the liberating Red Army soldier. And she experiences the world for the first time, the grass, you know, the wind blowing on your face. And so that gives it a remarkable tinge to the whole novel, because it's this wonderful rebirth in the middle of this absolute horror and ruin of wartime Eastern Europe.
Yes. Adults treating her as a child and looking after her.
That's right, yeah.
You know, one of the most memorable moments for me reading this book, and it's such a remarkable book, the soldiers and take these poor survivors to the town, which has been destroyed. But along the way, it's night, and so they stop and they bang on the door of a farmhouse. And when the old man opens the door, he says, "There are some people here who are going to stay with you tonight."
Right.
And You'll feed them and look after them, and then we'll go about our. I thought that was so touching to me, that the soldier would just say to them, "Look, they're suffering. You're going to look after them. We'll be here," and it's practical but very moving. That the soldier had no second thoughts about that. That he had responsibility for them, and he's going to make sure they're going to be taken care of.
Exactly. Yeah. No. That was it's an important moment in the book, to give it a sense of what is the world after they get out of the barn, where they do find they have a protectorate in there.
Yeah. He said they're people just like you.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. 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 No. It was, and this is Anne picking up on these things too, look at this new life that she's discovering from the kind of the terror of the barn, and then finally, slowly, they're finding care and freedom through the protection they're now getting.
Yeah. This year we had the anniversary, of course, of the defeat of Nazism, and we have this an ugly situation that's starting to happen year after year, that the Russians are not invited to participate in the events at Auschwitz, a camp which their army liberated. And here, this story is exactly the same kind of phenomena. We're not allowed to revisit what actually happened because of the power of ideology.
That's right. And we haven't progressed very much, because the book was published, I think, in 1974. And at the time, it did very well in Germany. It was well welcomed in Germany and I believe Italy and in France. It made a real impact, but very little in North America when it was published, because at the time in North America, of course, it was the growing increase in the anti-Soviet sort of
Solzhenitsyn.
Yeah, and Solzhenitsyn's book was published the same year, and of course, it was used it became the kind of the defining ideology, if you want to say it, for anti-communism in the West. And so an idea of Anne's book, which has nothing to do with ideology, really, the fact that one of the heroes of the book was a guy called Yuri, a Red Army soldier, who really took care of the family while they were, after they were liberated. He brought them food, extra food, for weeks and months, because he was stationed there. After the Red Army liberated that part of of Poland that became Ukraine, they paused for many months for the final push then into Germany. So he was with part of their family really for about 6 months or more, and took extraordinary care of him. And she reflects that in the book, which of course, in 1974 in Canada, nobody wanted to hear about a good Russian, a good Soviet soldier, Red Army guy that was positively portrayed. Whereas in Europe, where they understood that the fact was that the Red Army had liberated, or at least destroyed most of the Nazi army, had no problem accepting a Red Army soldier.
You know, we also lost in all these things with our own veterans' memories, which had to be suppressed as well. You know, the great Farley Mowat argued year in and year out against the Russophobia because he had fought in the war.
Right.
He knew what had happened and the stakes and loss of life to defeat Nazism. And yet we handed over the stage, or we didn't, but the stage was handed over to Solzhenitsyn, who I think you point out in your foreword, turned out not to be such a popular guy. Once he kept talking, he kind of revealed himself.
Well, that's it. And, well, he also was very critical then when, after a few years in the West. He lived in Vermont, actually. And after a few years there, he became very critical of the Western world. And he eventually returned to what was then Russia after the fall of the Soviet Union. And he became a, kind of a Russian nationalist. And that he would have been very unpalatable to most people in the West after that.
But he ended up with a talk show.
Yeah, there you go. Yes. The best people end up with talk shows, I guess.
We're talking to Peter MacFarlane. He has written the foreword to this wonderful novel, Dobrid, by Ann Charney. I really hope everybody will get this book. But and it's so apropos right now of the discussion of, well, what's going to happen with the place called Ukraine? And, by the way, correct me if I'm wrong, the Ukraine, means the borderlands, right?
Yes, yeah.
Why can't people get that through their minds when they think about this place? Because she was born, Ann Charney was born in Polish Ukraine, and her grandmother, I guess, and well, Chomiak's family had been born in Austria, Ukraine.
That's right.
Same place, Dobrid.
That's right. Yeah, that's right. Both her mother and not far away, or near Lviv, the Chomiak family, that generation had all grown up in the Austrian-Hungarian Empire. So the capital was Vienna for their kind of their nation, I guess, the divine nation. And they spoke, of course, Ukrainian and Polish and German. And the educated people in that part of, well, Poland, Ukraine, what Austrian-Hungarian Empire, they went to university in Vienna. And that was their center. And it was in after the First World War that there was the Polish regained much of their homeland from the Austrian-Hungarian Empire, and including their traditional sort of lands which is now Western Ukraine. So yes, they changed their nationality three times, and they didn't have to go out the door.
Yeah. So when they talk about, oh my goodness, you know what they. Sacred territory and all that of that is called Ukraine. At least they should remind us that it has been under several states in modern history, and unless they learn to compromise, it always will be. I've been reading Bogdan. I think is it Bogdanov? I hope I got it right. Who wrote The White Guard? And the villain there was Petlura, who was. This is at the end of World War One. Who was going to take over? He was anti-Semitic. He was fascist. There seems to be a pattern.
Yes, certainly the Ukrainian nationalists in the 1920s and 30s, and during the war, they were they were pro-Nazi. They were generally listed as a fascist party. That's what they believed in. And they were the people that, at the time, they were fighting for their statehood from the Poles. And then they, of course, they fought then against the Soviets as they came in and in alliance originally in a strong alliance with the Nazis. So yeah, that ideology was very prevalent in that part of Ukraine.
Yeah. We're speaking to Peter McFarlane, and he has written the foreword to a wonderful autobiographical novel by Anne Charney, Dobrid. Peter, it's been great talking to you. You have emphasized so eloquently this. If you want to understand, start with this novel. If you want to understand modern Ukraine right now, you read this book.
Right.
We thank you very much for joining us.
Oh, it's always a pleasure to talk to you. Thanks a lot for having me.
Thank you. Peter McFarlane. Thanks.